This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we take measure of the toll last week's election has taken on the collective psyche of eastern Jefferson County, and then we watch a local snowball build support for the water protectors of Standing Rock. So now, let's go inside the Compass.
It's been a very difficult evening and morning, I'm certain, for many, many people. In fact, the majority of voters in America. Frankly, at about 7, I became quite sick to my stomach, and I went home and I went to bed. My husband came and visited me in my room after my son and I cried for a while, and I told him not to tell me, don't wake me up if I fell asleep. So I woke up about 1 o'clock in the morning and I read the newspapers.
Yeah.
And then I didn't sleep the rest of the night,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
As with City Councilwoman and former Port Townsend Mayor Michelle Sandoval, speaking here with the KPTZ Community Radio News Team the morning after the election, the stunning upset victory of real estate mogul Donald J. Trump over Hillary Clinton was met with disbelief, tears, dread, grief, and anger over large portions of eastern Jefferson County last week, a place where Clinton won by a landslide against a candidate who journalist Jeffrey Toobin in this week's New Yorker magazine not unfairly described as, quote, a serial liar, a shady businessman, a bigot, and a self-proclaimed abuser of women. On that Wednesday morning, friends met with consolatory hugs rather than words, if they were up and about at all after a sleepless night. For those able to speak, there were far more questions than answers. Here's more of that morning after interview with Michelle Sandoval.
How do you think Mr. Trump's election is going to actually affect us here in Jefferson County?
I don't know, Charlie. I find that to be a question that's running through my mind. And, you know, several people have said to me, well, we're in this little bubble here. It's not going to affect us. But my son said, so this gives me the right to be a jerk. He actually used a different word. I can be a racist. I can be a misogynist. I can do any of those things and be completely ill-prepared for whatever job that I want. Because guess what? Trump is now our president.
Actually, through this whole ugly campaign, I've had a real difficult time believing that the masses of people who are coming and supporting Trump at these rallies were really doing it out of racism and misogyny, and that, you know, all of the things that Trump was expressing. And, you know, I had to look really hard and, you know, to find those issues that he was addressing that justifiably attracted voters to him. And I think among those certainly were his critique of the trade agreements that have, you know, exported jobs and so on. And I've thought a lot about the way the Democrats somehow really lost the working class in this election. And I just really prefer to think that people voted for him around those issues than around bigotry.
I can understand that, and I don't disagree with you necessarily. But simplistic solutions, bumper stickers don't work. You need to know how the government works. You need basic civics. You need to know the Constitution. Yeah. And this man doesn't know any of that. So it is populist. I get it. But there was 97% of what he spoke was lies. Let's remember that.
Yes.
So, yes, I understand that the middle class was lost. But it is, you know, maybe it's the chicken finally came home to roost. It's been going on for a long time. There had been plenty of people throughout the United States besides just white men or white women that have been feeling the lack of economic vitality. You know, so I get that, but I also can't ignore what comes out of his mouth. And if you are a principled person, you can't ignore that.
In the hours and days following, a spontaneous wave of protest erupted in cities across America, an unprecedented refusal of many thousands to accept the outcome of a presidential election, with many of the protesters expressing feelings similar to those voiced by KPTZ DJ Ray Cerebrin Thursday afternoon on his show Midlife Crisis Dance Party.
This week we elected someone who has shown himself to be cruel and ignorant and narcissistic as our president. And just like everybody else, I have felt bad many times in my life. I'm not saying I've lived a life of despair, but I have felt bad many times. I really do not remember being as disappointed as I am by this election ever before. In a public policy sense, it is likely a disaster. On a personal level, it feels like my values are being repudiated.
Cerebrin's remarks elicited criticism from one listener, Jim McCarran, who wrote in an email, "I do not know who the person broadcasting early this afternoon was, but I found him obnoxious to listen to. His comments about President-elect Trump were particularly unbecoming, KPTZ. As a supporter of KPTZ, I strongly suggest that political commentary is not appropriate, especially if not balanced by someone who represents the other half of the electorate." KPTZ offered McCarran the opportunity to be that balancing voice, but he declined, except to add in a follow-up email that, quote, "Violent protests are futile, undemocratic, and deserving of universal condemnation. At this time, everyone needs a cooling-off timeout. It is most unfortunate that our great country could not produce candidates for its presidency that are not encumbered by such baggage. At times like this, I remember my Irish mother's description of politicians. Surely they are all a pack of twisters." It should be noted here that the Trump protests have been thus far universally nonviolent, although one marcher in Portland, Oregon was reportedly shot during a confrontation with a motorist. There were no marches in the streets in eastern Jefferson County, although there was a large turnout for a hastily organized candlelight vigil Wednesday evening at the Quimper Universalist Unitarian Fellowship, which was followed on Friday by a four-hour gathering of young Port Townsend families and Quaker elders to consider both the emotional and spiritual ramifications of the election result, along with the path forward. Heather McRae Wolf was the organizer of the event and mediated the conversation, marking down on big sheets of newsprint the ideas the participants, mostly young mothers, had for moving forward in positive ways that do not fall victim to anger or hatred. I was asked not to record the proceeding, but I briefly interviewed McRae Wolf at the end of the day, as her 8-year-old daughter busily drew peace symbols, hearts, and other drawings with markers on large sheets of paper at our feet. I asked McRae Wolf to summarize the participants' responses.
I think people's experience of the last few days ranged from some people had a lot of anger that, and were grateful for a place to share that anger in sort of a safe space. But a lot of people, I think, had sorrow for themselves, for the country, for others, and confusion. I think about, like, how did this happen? Why did this happen? And as a group, I think we tried not to stay too long in let's analyze everything that led up to this point, but to really try to say what are ways we can move forward. We can acknowledge some of the really deep hurt that led up to this election and has resulted from the election, both.
And fears. I heard fears expressed, quite a few fears. Fears about the environment, what was going to happen to all of the environmental protections we've seen put in place, that would be undone. Fears for human rights.
Absolutely. And there was one particular topic was concern about health and wellness and people losing their health care or having more and more needs that would not be able to be met. And as we moved into sort of thinking about solutions, there was a thought of how do we track what people's needs are and how can we provide those in volunteer and pop-up sort of ways moving forward. The ideas of opening doors and providing spaces for people to sit together. There was also discussion of the safety pin idea, which has come about quite a bit in Britain now, post the Brexit vote, the idea of wearing a safety pin as a symbol that you are an ally for people who might be targeted. In that case, it's a large question around immigration, as it is here, but any group or for any reason, someone who might be targeted, if you wear a safety pin, you can identify yourself as an ally for that person. And members of the group also spoke about the really powerful imagery of holding together too, and really being stronger together, and that a pin is actually it's safety, and then it's also actually literally holding together. And
you
how
can identify as yourself as one of these allies simply by putting a safety pin on your lapel or your.
Exactly. So we passed around some safety pins, and it's a small gesture that I think gives people a sense of solidarity.
One of the main concerns I was hearing from people was about this incredible political divide that we have in this country now, and how to find our commonality. I mean, what were some of the ideas about that you heard?
Well, I think Quakers as a group have some wonderful traditions of reaching across divides and sort of being in community and communion with people different from yourself. And in the discussion here, we had conversations about the idea of viewing someone with a Trump sign or a Trump flag as an invitation to have a conversation and to really ask questions. And the idea of questioning and listening came up a lot. Like, can we cross divides by really turning to wonder, which is a phrase used by the Center for Courage and Renewal in Seattle, but this idea of when something is really beyond your understanding, trying to take it within your realm of understanding by asking enough questions that you see the humanity in the other person, that they see yours, and that you can connect on that level.
Taking as my premise that displaying a Trump sign was an invitation to talk, I headed the next day to a house on Hastings Avenue I had passed every day for months on my way in or out of town, with a huge one on display in a prominent garage window. Out in front of the garage, I encountered a sturdily built man with close-cropped steel-gray hair and a red plaid shirt, working on a big pickup truck. Identifying himself as the homeowner, he agreed after a bit of hesitation to talk with me.
So
what's your name?
Richard Staff, Sr.
Richard Staff, Sr., and you're a lifelong resident.
I've lived here all my life. Oh, I wasn't born here. I was born back in North Dakota, where they got the other problems going now.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. But I was born back there and came out here when I was about a year and a half year old.
So I ran
a business here my dad started a business in 62, Staff Construction. My kid's still doing, he's a firefighter paramedic in Seattle, but he still took over the company here. He's doing that.
I see.
So what else do you want to know?
Well, first of all, I'd like to know, I mean, so are you a lifelong Republican as well? I mean, are you?
Well, my mother was, yeah, and I listened to a lot of the Republican stuff growing up, you know. And I guess you'd call me a Republican.
So would you just automatically vote for any Republican candidate because they were Republican?
No, I'm not that much Republican. If I didn't like the person, I didn't vote for him, no.
Okay, so you're not one of the Republicans who felt Trump was a...
I didn't take the blood and, you know, do the blood thing with him, you know, and all that, you know, No, I just, he was an alternative man, and he was the only alternative I could see to what we've been going through. And obviously, I wasn't the only one, because I didn't see signs around. I was kind of tricked into putting mine up, because all the guys that I know up and down this way, they say, oh, we'll dare you to put it up, you know, because we live in an area here that he's not real popular. So my wife said she'd leave me if I put it up. So I left it in the garage in the window.
So she was.
She doesn't like Trump, no. But I do. I mean, I think he's got some good ideas. I think it's going to work. Just give him a chance. You know, Ronald Reagan, they didn't think he was going to be there either, but he turned out to be a pretty good president.
Well, now, it probably won't surprise you to hear that there are a lot of people in town who are actually in serious grief, like this week. And among them, I was over at the Quaker meeting yesterday afternoon, the meeting house, where... there were a bunch of young families had gotten together when, you know, one of the moms had invited her friends to come over. And I have to say that these women were just in consternation, some of them very angry because of, things like the Access Hollywood videotape and, the very disrespectful ways in which Trump has treated women. And, I mean, so how did you respond to the Access Hollywood videotape?
He said that stuff, but you know what? I don't treat it any worse than what they said. It was locker room bullshit. You know, come on. They tried to crucify that man from the time he started. And they thought they were successful, but obviously the people didn't fall for it because he's the president. And that's pretty much all I want to say about it. I know there's a lot of people grieving about it, but how come they're out protesting? How come? I thought this was America, man. You voted, you got the vote, and that was the end, you know? Now we got them, and those are the people, I don't think we need a lot of them here. They're professional goddamn protesters. They're out there, it doesn't matter what it is, if it's the Rock in North Dakota or this here or whatever, they're out there every time. Okay? You don't want to get me hot now?
This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. The local effort to support the Lakota Sioux of Standing Rock, North Dakota, in the effort to halt construction of the Dakota Access oil pipeline across the Missouri River and onto unceded traditional Lakota lands ratcheted up to another level in a week that opened with some 200 demonstrators marching up and down Water Street and holding a rally at the community center in Uptown, and ended with twice that number of people crowding into the Palindrome Music Hall for a variety show fundraiser that ended up netting close to $20,000 in cash and in-kind donations to support the acts of civil disobedience by peaceful demonstrators who refuse the moniker of protester but insist on instead being called water protectors. In between, there were several other related events, including an event at the Quimper Universalist Unitarian Fellowship that netted some $8,000 in donations, and demonstrations last Saturday outside the Wells Fargo and Chase banks, calling upon account holders to withdraw their deposits and transfer them to local credit unions in retaliation for the hundreds of millions of dollars those banks have loaned for the construction of the pipeline, which if completed would basically succeed in accomplishing what the, perhaps only temporarily, defeated Keystone Pipeline failed to achieve, a path to the sea for oil from the Dakotas and Canada. I spoke with bank protest organizer Doug Milholland on Saturday as sign-wielding demonstrators took their positions in front of the banks and at nearby intersections.
What we're hoping to do is shut the Wells Fargo Bank down. Mm-hmm. They're one of the major funders for the DAPL pipeline, and our intent is to follow the example of the Standing Rock Sioux, do this in a peaceful way, a way that treats customers and bank employees with courtesy. And our goal is to prepare for the long struggle, which is that we the people regain control over this culture. Mm-hmm. That's currently the culture of the United Corporate States. Mm-hmm. The owners of the bank structure have to take off their corporate helmets and understand that we the people do not wish to see the worst of global warming come crashing down upon our shoulders, and that the banking community must be held responsible for their investment decisions. Just being profitable isn't adequate. They have to respect the fabric of this living earth, that we hold them responsible for the behavior of the police, and we expect them to contact the sheriffs and make it plain that using pepper spray and attack dogs and sonic weapons and beanbags is they wouldn't treat whites that way. The Standing Rock people have every right to be treated with respect. They're fighting for their lives, after all, for the safety of their communities and for the clean water that they have.
But by far the biggest Standing Rock event of the week was the fundraising variety show that packed the Palindrome, organized by Doug's son Danny Milholland of Thunderbolt Productions, which featured an eclectic mix of performers, from native sacred songs by Water McQuillan and family to former Flying Karamazov brother Paul McGeed, who delivered a monologue on the doctrine of discovery and the papal bull that led to the confiscation of native lands and the creation of private property, while juggling bowling pins, to moving songs by such local talents as Carla Main, Abacus, Strong Sun Moon, and Matt Cercely. Lakota local Gary Buckman, featured on this show 2 weeks ago, was on hand. The homegrown juggling performing troupe Nanda closed out the evening. One of the keynote speakers of the evening was Lois Barnett, volunteer administrator of the Pacific Northwest Standing Rock Support Facebook page, and perhaps the single person locally who is the most counted upon for up-to-date info on the Standing Rock situation. Where are the proceeds from tonight's event going?
They're going to a group that are the official security camp team under the directive of the tribal council and the elders at camp and the spiritual leaders at camp. So these are a group of men and women who have all actually taken a vow to protect, serve, and tend to the well-being of camp, Standing Rock Camp. They live within Ocheti Sakowing, but they are not funded by either the tribal, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe fundraiser or Sacred Stone fundraiser. They have to raise funds for whatever supplies they need in order to protect everyone. It comes out of their pockets.
Out of their pockets and out of events like this?
Yes, and out of events like this and generous support through their fundraiser.
Is that the same as Wildwise? I was told the money goes to Wildwise.
Wildwise is being the umbrella for this event. Wildwise is founded and directed by the partner of one of the Ikche Wachasha Oyete's members. That's the name of the group, the security group. Their name is Ikche Wachasha Oyete, which means the common man. And sometimes it's said the Common Man Society.
And Wildwise is a 501c3 nonprofit.
It's a 501c3 nonprofit, tax deductible, so people can make
with a mission that's specifically related to Standing Rock,
yes.
Or a more broad umbrella.
No, it fortunately is. Their programs are for adults and children. Having adventures in the wild, learning wisdom from those adventures, and if Ikche Wachasha Oyete is not having an adventure in the wilderness, I don't know what they're having. So, yes, it does.
Old an organization is that?
Ikche Wachasha, they just formed at camp.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, as a result of the need for protection there. But Frank Archambault, who's the nephew of David Archambault, and David Archambault is the tribal chair council,
right.
Who's been to the UN and so Frank is one of the first members. He won't call himself a leader because there's no leader within the group. They are one body, you know, they work as one. So, but Frank's been there since the beginning, and he is Standing Rock Sioux, and there are many vets within Ikche Wachasha Oyete, and also many people who have experience before in law enforcement. So they're highly skilled, highly trained people who are serving peace and protecting the water and protecting the sacred.
So all of the funds from this, all of the funds are going basically towards support of the camps and...
To support, yes.
Right.
But specifically through or to this team who protects everyone at camp. So it benefits everybody by going directly to this team. They literally do not have shelter for themselves for the winter. Their tow truck was used to stop an infiltrator's truck from harming protectors.
Wow, tell me about that.
That was on 1027. There was an infiltrator that the security team was tracking. They suspected him because he didn't look familiar. He had a bandana over his face to look like a protector. He was in a white truck, and he kept creeping up on where the treaty camp was, they call it, the one where they took back the treaty land and put a camp up. So he kept creeping up on camp. They kept watching him, and then he just started full speed towards the crowd of people. And security intercept him by T-boning his truck with their tow truck and stopped him. And then he got out.
Both trucks destroyed? I mean, was that...
No. I don't know about his. It was sided. hit by on the side. The security.
But this was like an assault. He was like intending to do harm.
He was assaulting people. He was totally. And then he got out of the truck with his fully loaded automatic weapon and pointed it at people as they tried to de-escalate, and then, or as they did de-escalate. Security de-escalated the situation after they got him out of the truck. But he did aim his weapon at people as they were getting the whole situation under control and contained him until contained means just surrounded him. They didn't touch him. And then they called BIA, the
Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Yes, thank you. They called BIA and they officially arrested him. So that their truck is damaged from that. The steering wheel's not on right anymore. They need help with that. They need help with better body protection because they put their bodies literally between those police batons or what it, mercenary batons and the elders, and the children aren't online and on front lines anymore, but they protect even women. You know, the women, they put their bodies between the women and the mercenaries. So they need...
Do you have any handle on how many communities there are like Port Townsend across the nation? I mean, this is quite an outpouring site. This looks like more than a full house
this,
here.
Yes,
tonight.
This is not unusual, fortunately. But this group that we're raising money for is under the radar just by the very nature of their work. They are not visible. You know, they keep themselves just off to the side, ready to protect. So people don't realize who they are and how much need they have. So there are many fundraisers going on, you know, many events have security.
Well, I was thinking about that as I walked past the front table with all of the cash in that box and thinking, well, this is great. All these people are donating.
Absolutely.
It's like, well, how do we know that our cash is getting where we want it to go?
Because one of the members of Ikche Wachashoyate, whose ribs were broken on 1027, his partner is here. Wildwise is her 501c3. She wants her partner protected, right? So she's going to make sure that the money gets to these protectors, not just to him. They are a team. They are sworn, bonded.
A team of how many?
45. 40 to 45. Men and women.
Now let's just like get a quick news update, if we can, about what's happened over the last week at Standing Rock. I mean, you know, like Thursday, 10 days ago or something, there was the action to clear the camp that was on the contested territory.
Right.
So has there been any, like, further activity of that sort since then?
There hasn't been any... Well, can't say that. There have still been many arrests. There have still been actions. There's the main thing that happened on several days was protectors going to a place called Turtle Mountain. It's a burial site, and one of the women buried there, there's a photo of her from, you know, the 1800s. She was a peace warrior, you know. She was an advocate of peace, married two white men, you know, at... during her lifetime. She and another woman are buried up there, and the water protectors wanted to go up and have a prayer ceremony there. This is not Dapple land. Dapple's got nothing to do with this land. It's Army Corps land. But regardless, the military showed up. They couldn't get their LRADs up there, but there was a full force of mercenaries with tear gas, mace, rubber bullets. People were shot and injured badly. Mace directly, you know, close range with everything.
One woman, so it's like warfare.
It's warfare. One woman was shot all the way across the river.
Except there's only one side that's shooting.
Yes. One side that's shooting bullets and mace, and one side that's shooting prayers.
Sponsored by the New Old Time Chautauqua, the Port Townsend Co-op, the Bellingham Co-op, and Mountain Spirit Herbals, there will be one or possibly two buses departing from Port Townsend next week to head for Thanksgiving at Standing Rock. If you would like to be on one of those buses or to support the Standing Rock Water Protection effort, go to the PNW StandingWithStandingRock.org website. That URL once again is PNW, as in Pacific Northwest, StandingWithStandingRock.org, all one word, website. This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. Today's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans. Thank you.